One. Frog and Bonzo came from the saloon and toward the store. Frog said to a man at the edge of the crowd, "What's happening? How come all the commotion?"
"Old Captain Hendry's done got himself another sucker. It's a race between his bay and that marsh tacky. Odds is 5-1.
"You mean Ishmael?" Frog questioned.
"Don't know nothing about no Ishmael. It's a black horse that boy's riding. You reckon them folks is really dumb enough to race that little fart against Thunder?"
"Maybe so. How long is the race?"
3 miles.
"Did you say 3 miles? Frog asked, his mind clicking.
3 miles is what I said. Old Thunder will be back here before that runt gets started.
Who's taking bets?
Man right over there with the red shirt and straw hat."
Frog waved his hand and shouted,
"I got $200 on the black, 5-1, and you got a bet,"
he said to Bonzo. "Give me that bonus money, quick. We done got us a sucker bet. Ishmael put dust in that big horse's mouth afore they turned the 2 mile mark." Several men snickered as Frog put the doubloons into a wooden betting box. The man who brought the bay from the stable sprang onto the saddle. Then he and Zek lined the horses up in the middle of the street. Hendry shouted,
"When I fire my pistol, let him go."
Ishmael danced nervously as they waited, and when the boom came, the bay lunged forward and pulled away rapidly. Before they reached the end of the street, he was 40 yards ahead. Zek watched the big horse move away. He patted Ishmael's neck and said, "Not now, Ishmael. Let him go. Just trail him like we do a cow. You can bite his legs later." When they reached the holding pen marking the halfway point, the bay turned in a tight circle, never breaking stride. Zek wheeled Ishmael quickly, cutting the distance between them to 30 yards. Then the bay increased the gap back to 40. Zek waited for several moments more, and then he said, "Now, Ishmael, bite him now." Ishmael sprang forward as if until this point he had not been running at all. He stretched his neck out like a heron in flight, and his hooves barely touched the ground as he streaked across the rutted sand. In 5 seconds, he was abreast the bay and moving ahead, and when they reached the finish line, he was 50 yards in front of Thunder. All but the man who had taken the bets cheered wildly, and even he showed respect for the little horse and its boy rider. Hendry came to Tobias immediately and handed him a paper.
"It's all yours," he said. "I'll have one of my men ride out in the morning and show you the land lines."
Tobias accepted the deed reluctantly.
"I hate to take your land over a horse race, Captain Hendry. It don't seem right."
"Nonsense," Hendry replied. "You won fair and square, and it's yours now. And besides that, it's nothing to me. I won that deed myself in a poker game."
"Well, I don't exactly know what we'll do with land in Punta Rasa. I guess I'll give it to Zek. He's the one who won it, not me." Zek stopped Ishmael just short of the dock, then he trotted him back to the wagon.
"I told you he could do it, Papa," he said excitedly. "He ain't even got his wind up. Ishmael could run from here to the hammock and back if he wanted to."
"Not that far, Zek. But he sure did a job on that 3 mile stretch." Hendry ran his hand across Ishmael's neck. Then he said to Zek,
"That's some horse, son. He's not even sweating. You want to sell him? I'll give you $300 for him."
"No, sir," Zek said quickly. "Ishmael's my friend. I'd never sell my friend for no kind of money."
"I figured you'd say that, and I don't blame you. I just thought I'd make an offer. He's the first horse to dust Thunder like that. Tell you what I want you to do. Go in the store and get a whole bushel of apples for you and him, and tell the clerk to put it on my bill. He'll do it, because I own the store. You and that little horse earned it."
Zek jumped from the saddle and said,
"Thanks, Captain Hendry. Thanks a lot. Ishmael never ate an apple before we come here, and me either. We both like it, and Ishmael thanks you, too."
"Some boy you got there," Hendry said, watching Zek run into the store. "He'll make a mark someday." "Thank you kindly," Tobias and Emma both said at the same time. Then they laughed. "I've never seen such a good loser as you," Tobias then said. Hendry laughed, too. "What the hell, it's all in fun. Keeps the blood flowing, and there's not much else to do in Punta Rasa. It's been a real pleasure knowing you folks." "Same here," Tobias said. Frog came to the wagon carrying the box of money. He said,
"Just got 4 years' pay for nothing. Me and Bonzo will ride out and find you a little later this afternoon. We need to spend some of these coins and find out how it feels to pay cash for a change."
"We'll be along the river where we first camped," Tobias said. "We got to get on out there now and feed the dogs. You and Bonzo don't be too late. We still got some talking to do." After they reached the campsite and built a fire, Emma started supper while Zack fed the dogs. Tobias was alone at the wagon with Skillet. He said to him, "I wanted to wait till we got back out here to tell you this. Those sacks of gold in the trunk are worth $525 each. One sack is yours."
"Say what?"
Skillet asked, his eyes suddenly bulging. "One sack is yours. You've earned it."
"Oh, Mr. Tobias, you don't need to do that," Skillet said, still shocked. "You and your folks needs the money more than I do. These clothes you bought me is enough. If I could have just two or three coins for my own, I'd be satisfied. You've done enough for me already."
"Nope. Without you, me and Zack could never have rounded up all them cows. And from now on, every time we sell a herd, your share will be a dollar for each cow."
"Lord, Lord, Mr. Tobias, I don't know what to say. I ain't never had even a dollar of my own, much less 500. What I gonna do with all that money?"
"Save it, and let it build up. You'll find a use for it someday."
"Can I open a sack and just look?"
Skillet asked. "Then I'll put it back in the trunk with the rest." "Help yourself." Skillet climbed into the wagon, opened the trunk, and removed one of the canvas bags. He untied the top and ran his hands as far as he could push them into the coins. Then he scooped out a handful and let them drop back into the sack one by one, mesmerized by the clinking sound as metal bounced against metal. He said,
"It sure is pretty. I never thought all them old yellow hammers we chased and marked would turn into this."
"Me either," Tobias responded, amused by the look on Skillet's face. "And I'm not sure I believe it yet. But that ain't nails in them sacks, it's gold."
"Can I put two or three in my pocket? Just to hear them jingle?"
"Take all you want, it's yours. Just cut a nick in the sack so you'll know which one it is."
Skillet took a knife from his pocket and cut the sack. Then he put three coins in his pocket and put the sack back in the trunk. He climbed out of the wagon and said,
"I never thought something like this would ever happen to me. I's worked all my life like a mule, and never got a penny for it. And I gave up hoping a long time ago, when you found me hid in them bushes. I hadn't had nothing to eat for a week but roots and berries. Now I got a belly full of fried chicken, a new pair of breeches and boots, and a sack full of gold. Lord God, Mr. Tobias, you's the best white folks they's ever been."
"You've earned every bit of it," Tobias said. "But we've got to go back and try it again. We don't want to quit on this." Frog and Bonzo came riding into the camp, each with a gallon jug sloshing in the saddlebag. They dismounted, then Frog pulled out the jug and said,
"Cuban rum. Either one of you want to snort?"
"I don't drink that rot gut,"
Tobias said. "I seen my daddy die of that stuff time he was 30 years old, and I aim to live longer than he did." Frog turned up the jug and let the brown liquid gurgle down his throat. Then he hacked twice and said,
"I've been drinking it for over 30 years now, since I was old enough to pull the stopper from a jug, and I ain't dead yet. And at 50 cents a gallon, I got money on me now to empty enough jugs to line a prairie."
"If you do, your innards'll be pickled for sure. But suit yourself. If you want to turn all your money into stale piss, that's your business. Me, I got other uses for mine." Frog put the jug on the wagon floor.
"You know, I never thought about it like that. But you're right. I guess all I'm doing is running my money right through my gut and on the ground. Every time I take a leak, I'm squirting out gold. But I'll just go on and enjoy this jug before I think about quitting."
Tobias said, "What I want to talk to you about is what you aim to do now. If you want to stay on with us, you're welcome to do so."
"Well, I don't know, Mr. McIvey,"
Frog said hesitantly. "Me and Bonzo is kind of drifters, and I have to stay with him. He ain't got much to say, and nothing much to think with, so I have to look out for him. But you and Mrs. Emma has been real good to us, and I'd like to know what you got in mind. If you want to join us permanent, I'll raise the pay to $1 a day, and it'll be all the time, not just on the drive. And for every cow you and Bonzo round up and put in the herd, you'll get $1 a cow when we sell them.
You'll do the branding and cutting, and we'll keep a tab. Captain Hendry told me we ought to start cutting the balls off them bulls and turn them into steers. He said it makes them grow faster.
Let me see if I got this straight, Frog said, scratching his head. If me and Bonzo was to round up 100 wild cows and put 'em in the herd, we'd get $100 bonus a split. And if we got 1,000, it would be $1,000 bonus. Is that what you're saying?
That's right. $1 a cow, plus a regular salary, and all you can eat.
We'd just quit drifting for a while, Frog said, grinning. You got a deal, Mr. McIvey. Hell, we'll pop every cow out of every swamp and prairie in Florida. Next time we come to Punta Rasa, we'll have a herd that stretches 10 miles.
It ain't that easy, Tobias cautioned. Don't count your money before you get it.
This time you just help drive the cows, not round them up. We lost a whole herd one time to a storm, and we still got to run through wolves and gators, but we'll sure try.
Frog then said,
Where's Zek?
He was over there a few minutes ago cramming chicken down them dogs' throats. You need to see him?
I got a 10-pound bag of sugar for Ishmael. That little hoss done made me more money than I ever seen in a lifetime. How come you all didn't bet on the race?
We did. Won 150 acres. We might be camped right now on land Zek owns. One of Captain Hendry's men is going to show me the landlines in the morning.
Well, I'm damned, Frog exclaimed. Wasn't no way that big hoss could outrun Ishmael for 3 miles, and I wondered why you didn't take advantage of it. I guess I done joined up with the right outfit for sure. I'll go and find Zek. I want to feed Ishmael myself.
Apples and sugar, Tobias said. Don't spoil that horse. He won a race, but he still got to work for his keep.
Frog turned to leave. Just one thing, Mr. McIvey. Me and Bonzo wants to ride up to Fort Myers and see what it's like. Would it be okay with you? We'll catch up with you in a few days.
That's fine with me. We got to stop going back and pay Likes and Lowry for their cows, and we're just going to mosey along anyway, shoot a deer or two and eat, and camp when we want to. We ain't in no hurry, and it'll probably be 2 weeks or more before we get back to the hammock. But if you miss us on the trail, are you sure you can find my place?
We'll find it, and we'll scout out a better trail than we had coming down here. I don't ever want to get boxed in again like we did in that gator swamp.
I had the same thing in mind, Tobias said. Are you and Bonzo staying for supper? Emma brought some chickens back from the store and she's making stew.
Frog sniffed the air and said eagerly, We'll stay. We can head out for Fort Myers later.
Bonzo followed Frog, and Tobias said to Skillet, Well, it seems we still got us a cattle company. I'm glad they're staying.
Me too, Skillet said. Them two looks like scarecrows, but they sure got guts beneath all them bones. And if it hadn't been for you, Mr. Tobias, I'd have joined them in a snort of that rum. It's like horse racing. It ain't too bad if you don't do it too often.
Don't let me stop you. It's every man to his own liking. And by the way, what happened with the chore you wanted to do in Punta Rasa? You never told me what it was.
Skillet was surprised that Tobias remembered.
I asked around in town this morning, and they ain't no colored folk in Punta Rasa. I'll take care of it some other time.
Tobias sensed that Skillet didn't want to discuss whatever it was he wanted to do.
Well, whenever. If it's something you need time off for, take all you want.
It can wait, but not too much longer. I'll see to it later.
Watch it now. Be careful. Don't scratch it.
Tobias, Skillet, the clerk, and one other man lifted the stove to the wagon floor and pushed it as far as possible from the edge.
Tobias said, It'll have to ride there. Don't shove it against a trunk. It's a good thing we don't have any Georgia mountains to cross.
Where you want me to put the stovepipe?
The clerk asked.
Right behind the stove, where it can't roll out.
We go across a wet marsh. We'll have to hitch another horse to the wagon.
Skillet said, That thing's a heap heavier than it looks.
We just might have to do that, Tobias said. It do weigh right smart.
Tobias thanked the clerk and the man for their help before he climbed to the seat and started down the street. The extra weight caused the wagon wheels to cut a 3-inch rut in the sand. They moved slowly out of town and past the holding pens, then along the road bordering the river. Tobias cursed the pace, wanting to trot the horse, hurry to the camp, and see Emma's reaction.
When they reached the camp, Emma came to the wagon and stared open-mouthed. She finally said,
"What on earth, Tobias? Where'd you get the stove?"
"At the store. I bought it yesterday as a surprise for you. You like it?"
"Lordy, yes, it's the prettiest one I've ever seen."
She climbed into the wagon and started opening doors and looking inside. Zek rode up on Ishmael, gazed for a moment, and then said,
"What kind of a horse is that on the stove, Papa? It's got a horn on its head."
"Don't know, but it's sure fancy, ain't it?" Emma said,
"I can hardly wait to try it out. Can I cook on it on the way back?"
"If me and Skeleton Zek can get it off the wagon. We don't want to set the wagon afire. We can sure do it when Frog and Bonzo joins us. I think I'll put in some of the pipe and see how it looks." Tobias climbed into the wagon and put 3 lengths of stovepipe into the stove. Then he got out, backed away, and studied carefully. "Looks fine. Just like the stack on them steamboats in Punta Rasa. I'll leave it there till we have to go under a tree."
"I ain't never seen a horse like that,"
Zek said again, still puzzled.
"You want us to load the rest of the stuff now?"
"Yes," Tobias answered. "We need to go on and get across the river." As soon as the wagon was loaded, they moved up the road to the ferry. The ferry tender looked curiously at the McIvy Cattle Company sign on the wagon, at the 4 new black felt hats, the wolf dogs and miniature horse, the lanky bearded man and the giant Negro. He said,
"That's a mighty fancy stove you folks got there. When I first seen you coming, I thought it was a calliope."
Tobias drove the wagon onto the barge as Zek and Skillet plunged their horses into the river and swam. When the ferry reached the other side, the tender said,
"Where you folks headed?"
"Over to the Kissimmee," Tobias replied. Then he whipped the horse and moved up the bank. The ferry tender shouted,
"Good luck, folks!"
Then he continued staring until they turned past a clump of palmetto and passed from view. As he started back across the river, he muttered,
"Shoot, I thought for sure it was a circus coming."
Chapter 18. Spring, 1875.
"Hellfire," Tobias roared. "They done it again."
He kicked the stump of an orange tree and said,
"Cussed cows, damn stupid critters."
He was inside a 3-acre plot surrounded by a split-rail fence. A half dozen cows were standing in a group, swishing their tails and looking at him. Rows of small orange trees had been eaten to the ground and looked like dead sticks protruding from the sandy soil. Tobias jerked one tree from the ground and threw it at the cows, causing them to wheel quickly and trot off to the far side of the fence. They turned, faced him again, and shook their horns menacingly.
"Cuss you!"
he shouted as he left the plot and walked hurriedly back into the hammock. The house was 3 rooms larger now, one a kitchen built especially for the stove, another a bedroom for Zek, and a storeroom containing 2 steamer trunks. The palmetto thatch was replaced with cypress shingles, and there was a porch across the front of the house. A cabin had been built for Frog and Bonzo, and Skillet had added an additional room to his cabin. There was also a barn down by the garden area. Tobias stomped into the house and said,
"The cows is at my orange tree again. That's the 3rd time I've planted them, and them damned critters has done it every time."
Emma continued chopping onions as she said,
"Why don't you keep the cows away from them?"
"Man who sells them to me says if I don't put cows in there to do the fertilizing, the trees won't grow, and that makes sense."
"Then buy taller trees."
"Taller trees," Tobias repeated.
"How come I didn't think of that?
If the trees is taller than the cows, then the cows can't eat them.
That's what I'll do, buy taller trees. I'll send Skillet for another wagon load."
Emma smiled as Tobias walked out briskly. Tobias had made 4 more drives into Punta Rasa, each one larger than the one before. He now had regular buying points along the trail, and his last herd numbered over 3,000. Predators still stalked them, and many nights they kept fires burning to turn away wolves, but there'd been no major disasters. The old army horse died and was replaced by a tall black mare, and Tobias also purchased a buckboard and another horse to pull it. He bought two oxen, which were used to pull the supply wagon during trail drives and when they followed grazing herds in summer months. Other than this and the purchase of orange trees, the money from the sale of cows had been stockpiled, and now one steamer trunk was filled with sacks of gold doubloons, and another started. Frog and Bonzo were the only ones interested in the coins as something to spend, and for 2 weeks after each drive they disappeared. To the others, the doubloons were just something to pile into a trunk and exchange for supplies when needed. The McIvy clan's lifestyle changed none at all. Zek had grown along with the homestead and was now as tall as his father and 10 pounds heavier. But unlike Tobias, his hair turned a sandy brown. The most visible change in Tobias was the white specks that invaded his black beard. Tobias found Skillet down at the barn, mending a harness strap. He said straight away, "I want you to take the wagon and get me some more orange trees, same place as last, out west of Fort Pierce." Skillet noticed the agitation in Tobias's voice and manner. He said, "Them cows don't eat your trees again, ain't they?" Tobias ignored the question. "This time get taller trees. I don't want nothing less than 6 feet or more. Stand by each one of them, and if one's shorter than you, don't buy it. Get all you can cram on the wagon. Emma will give you the money."
"All right, Mr. Tobias, I'll start right away. But would it be okay if I stay for a day or two? I got a chore to do while I'm down there."
"What kind of a chore?" Tobias asked, still agitated. "You've been saying now for over 5 years you got a chore to do every time you leave the hammock, and you ain't done it yet. If you got something you want to do, why the hell don't you go on and do it instead of just talking about it?"
"It ain't never worked out yet," Skillet replied. "Maybe this time it will."
"Must be some chore," Tobias muttered. "Take what time you have to, but don't be gone too long. Soon as they get in with this last bunch of cows, we got to move the herd to grazing ground. Ain't enough grass left here for a billy goat to eat."
"Sure ain't," Skillet agreed. "We don't get some rain soon, the whole place gonna look like a frost hit it. I ain't never seen it be this dry for so long this time of year."
Zek popped the whip just over the cow's head, turning it sharp right and into the pen. He leaped from the saddle and closed the gate. Then he called for the dogs to leave the cows and come to him. Frog wheeled his horse and said, "That's the last of this bunch. We can start back tomorrow." The corral held 60 cows. They had spent idle winter months building small pens 10 miles apart along the areas of the spring roundup, using them to brand and cut the cattle as they caught them, and also contain them at night or while they hunted others. Zek rode over to a nearby cypress stand and tied Ishmael. Then he gave each dog a strip of dried beef. It was late afternoon, and long flights of herons and egrets drifted eastward. The sky in the west was cloudless and streaked with red and orange, marking the time when day creatures retreated and night dwellers emerged. Zek watched with amusement as a mother raccoon ambled by with her brood, chattering a loud protest of his presence. Frog and Bonzo rode to the stand and dismounted. Frog stretched and groaned, and then he said, "Ain't nothing but a fool makes his living rubbing his butt against the saddle all day. Sometimes mine feels like it's busted." "What you got left in the way of grub?" Zek said. "Nothing but a couple of strips of dried beef and a few biscuits, and they're as hard as hickory nuts."
"Don't even have that," Bonzo said. "Just one scrap of meat that looks like it ought to be buried."
"You want me to kill a rabbit?" Zek asked. "If you do, I best see to it now before it gets too dark."
"What I miss most out here is Miss Emma's vittles," Frog said. "I ain't got nothing left. We ought to have brought more supplies that turned back 2 days ago. We could have come back and got them cows some other time."
"Papa said we're not coming back after this," Zek said. "We're heading out for grazing. And besides that, none of these cows is marked yet. You and Bonzo will get credit for all of them."
"Maybe so," Frog said. "But that don't help my belly none. I'd as soon have a big bowl of Miss Emma's hot stew just now as a $60 over yonder in the pen."
"We could go on and cut some of the bulls and roast their balls," Bonzo said. "That tastes better to me than jerky, and it'd be hot, too."
"Damn it, Bonzo, shut up!" Frog snapped. You trying to make me throw up? I ain't hankering for no bull nuts, and I done ate enough rabbit that my ears is beginning to grow.
He scratched his head in thought, and then he said,
I got a good idea. We couldn't be over an hour's ride from Fort Drum, maybe less. We could go over there and get some fresh grub and be back here not long after dark.
What about the cows? Zek asked.
We can't go off and leave them unguarded. Hell, they ain't going nowhere inside that pen, and I ain't seen a wolf sign in 3 days. We could leave the dogs tied to the fence to watch after them.
That'd be like using Nip and Tuck for fish bait, Zek said, shaking his head in disagreement. Some bears or other varmints come in here, the dogs wouldn't have a chance tied to a rail. We'd have to take them with us.
Ain't nothing going to happen to the cows, Frog insisted. We can build a fire on both sides of the corral. That would keep off anything that comes around till we get back.
You two go on and I'll stay, Zek said. I'm not all that hungry anyway. I can make do on what I got.
We ain't about to leave you out here by yourself. If something happened to you while we're gone, your papa would raise more hell than you ever seen. Either you go or nobody goes.
You think I can't handle things by myself?
Zek asked angrily.
It ain't that and you know it. And there's no use in getting riled up. Your papa wouldn't want nobody left alone at night on the prairie, not you or me or Bonzo. We're going to go or not? If we ain't, then you might as well shoot that damn rabbit.
Well, if your belly's in that bad a shape, I guess I'll go, Zek said reluctantly. But I don't like it. I've seen what can happen to a cow at night, and you have too.
Ain't nothing going to happen, Frog repeated.
As soon as the fires were glowing, they rode eastward, cantering the horses as the dogs followed, moving at a steady pace across the palmetto prairie. The sunset reflected light ahead of them, a dim glow rapidly fading into the tops of cabbage palms, and cypress stands stood out like darkened castles looming upward from the flat land. Just as the last sunbeam died, they spotted a bonfire a mile to the north. Trading posts in the wilderness often put out such beacons at night, guiding unfamiliar travelers to a spot they could never find in darkness. The horses panted slightly when the trio rode in and stopped in front of the store. Soft coal oil light spilled out from the two front windows and the open door, and several men sat on the building's porch, chewing and spitting silently. Zek followed Frog and Bonzo inside, still doubtful about the journey and wishing he had remained behind. He wanted them to make their purchases quickly and head back to the corral. Frog said to a man wearing a white apron,
"You got cheese?"
"Enough to stop a horse. How much you want?"
"3 pounds and 6 cans of beans. You got bread and tinned sausage?"
"My wife bakes bread every day and we got sausages."
"3 each.
The man put the order into a brown sack and said, "Be anything else?"
"Them men out front just chewing their cuds like cows, or is that tobacco?"
Frog asked.
"Tobacco."
"Then throw in a twist."
"That'll be 250, the man said, putting into the sack a link of twisted tobacco that looked like smoked sausage. He took the money and made change from a small wooden box.
"You men just passing through?"
"Nah," Frog responded. "We got some cows penned out on the prairie west of here. We ran out of grub."
"If you ain't in a hurry, there's going to be a hoedown here as soon as the folks come in out of the woods. You're welcome to stay."
Frog's face brightened.
"You hear that, fellas? They're having a frolic here in a little while. You want to stay?"
"I do," Bonzo said quickly.
"What's a frolic?" Zek asked, annoyed that something might change their plans to leave immediately.
"Fiddles and dancing," Frog responded. "Ain't you ever been to one?"
"If I had, I wouldn't ask what it is. We need to go now. We ain't got time for such stuff.
If you ain't never held a girl and stomped to the fiddles, boy, you're old enough now to learn what it's like. It's more fun to kiss a girl than a cow, and a girl's a heap softer to lie on than that hard prairie ground. You might make out tonight if you just give it a shot."
Zek felt a hot blush sweep across his face. He said harshly, "We need to go on now and see to the cows. We ain't got time to fool with no girls."
"Cows ain't everything, Zek. Just take it easy. We'll stay for a short spell and leave. You might enjoy it if you'd try."
They went outside, sat at the edge of the porch, and started eating. People drifted in and out of the darkness on horses and in ox-drawn wagons, and soon a milling crowd filled the clearing. several men threw more logs on the fire, bringing the front of the store into focus. Then three men with fiddles mounted the porch and played briskly. Another shouted cadence as men grabbed women, starting the first round of a square dance. Zek watched sullenly as Frog and Bonzo joined the line of dancers, kicking their boots into the soft dirt, swaying, linking arms, then swinging down the line as they changed partners again and again. He was unaware of the girl's presence until he looked up, and he wondered how long she'd been standing there. She had flaming red hair that flowed past her shoulders, pale green eyes, and white skin not burned brown by prairie sun. A blue cotton dress came down to her shoes, and she wore a matching ribbon around her slim waist.
She said, "It's better on a wooden floor where you can hear the shoes tapping. The men are going to build a meeting hall soon so we can have the frolics inside. You look like you're not enjoying it. Don't you feel good?"
"Well, I... Zek stammered, unable to form a coherent answer.
"I've never seen you here before. My daddy owns a store, and I usually know everybody who comes to the frolic. My name's Glenda Turner. What's yours?"
"Zek," he managed to say. "Zek McIvey.
We came in for food. We've got cows penned out on the prairie. You live nearby?"
"Up on the Kissimmee, about a day's ride from here. We're in the cattle business, and we're finishing the spring roundup." She waited for him to ask, and when he remained silent, she said,
"You want to dance the next one with me?"
Zek felt like he had swallowed a pine burr that lodged in his throat. He forced out the words,
"I don't know how. I've never been to a frolic before." "That's too bad. Would you like some punch? I helped my mother make it, and I know it's good. The bowl is on the table at the end of the porch."
"That would be fine." Zek was still sitting, and when he got up to follow her, she came only to the top of his shoulder. When they reached the table, she filled a cup with red liquid and handed it to him. He downed it in one gulp and said,
"That's real good. I've never tasted anything like it. It's sugar that makes it sweet. But it's better if you just sip."
His face turned crimson as he said, "I'm sorry I drank it so fast. Next time I won't.
Here, let me get you another."
As she refilled the cup, she brushed against him. Zek immediately smelled a scent he had never before known. Lilac water. He breathed deeply, drawing the fragrance into his lungs, feeling a strange sensation pulse through his veins, making him giddy.
"How old are you?"
she asked for the second time, with no answer. He shook his head, feeling as if he had jumped a ten-rail fence.
"I'm sorry, I didn't hear you at first. I'm 17, going on 18. I'm 14. But my mother says I look older. Do you think I look older than 14? "I don't know. I've never been around girls. Only my mama. But you look fine to me." "Thank you. I've never been around boys very much either. There's not many young people in Fort Drum."
The music stopped between dances, and Zek noticed Frog and Bonzo out by a wagon with several sweating men drinking from gallon jugs. He started to go to them and insist they leave, but said instead,
"You want to see my dogs? They look like wolves. They're on the other side of the store." "I'd like to. I've never seen a wolf or a dog that looked like one."
They walked past the crowd of people and found the dogs sitting in the shadows, waiting patiently as Zek told them to do. He said, "This one is Nip and that one Tuck. They're the best cow dogs that's ever been."
"Aren't you afraid of them?" she asked. "They're so big." "They's good dogs. They won't hurt you. Touch one."
She put her hand on Nip's head, causing his tail to wag vigorously.
"See? I told you. He likes you. You want to see my horse, too? His name is Ishmael, and he's a marsh tacky. The Seminoles gave him to us."
They went to the rail where Ishmael was tied. Zek said, "He's little, but he runs like the wind. I want to race with him in Punta Rasa.
outran a big Tennessee bay twice his size. Then, on an impulse, he said, "You want a ride? We'll just go a short piece and come back. If you'll help me in the saddle. I can't get up there in this long dress."
Zek picked her up gently and placed her sideways in the saddle. Then he put his foot in the stirrup and mounted Ishmael behind her. He reached around her slim body and took the rein, moving the horse slowly away from the building. The smell of her came to him even stronger as their bodies brushed together constantly with the rhythm of the horse. Her closeness overwhelmed him, making him forget the cows and Frog and Bonzo and the frolic and even where he was. His arms tightened around her with each step, and he trotted Ishmael for a half mile before he realized how far he had gone. Then he turned and headed back toward the light in the distance. When they came back to the store, and the people, and the screaming fiddle, he was jolted back to reality. He jumped from the horse, lifted her down, and said, "I've got to find Frog and Bonzo and go now. There's bears and wolves out on the prairie, and the cows might be in danger. I didn't mean to take you so far." "I enjoyed it," she said, touching his hands that still gripped her waist. "Will you be coming back soon?" He jerked his hands away, not realizing he was still holding her. "I don't know. We're taking the cows grazing as soon as we get back to the hammock, and after that we'll go to Punta Rasa to sell them. If I don't come back this summer, I will in the fall." "If you do, I'll teach you to dance. Will you promise me you'll try?" "I promise. And I'll be back as soon as I can." Frog and Bonzo were still at the wagon drinking, and Glenda watched as Zek turned quickly and walked straight to them. He said, "We best go. We've been here long enough. We've got to see to the cows."
"Seems you've been seeing us something all evening," Frog said, taking another drink. "That little red-headed gal you've been herding around is the best-looking heifer I've ever seen. You did right well for the first time at a frolic."
"I wasn't doing anything," Zek said defensively. "I was just showing her the dogs and Ishmael."
"The way she was looking at you, you could as well showed her a rattler and she wouldn't have known the difference. But don't make no apology because she latched on to you and stayed with you, Zek. Every woman I danced with told me I smelled like a polecat and wouldn't dance no more, and I guess I do. Maybe it's best we go on now and head back to the corral. We've done all the damage we can do here tonight. Next time I'll wash up some first."
They mounted and rode westward, putting the horses into a canter again, crossing a plain now flooded with soft moonlight. It seemed to Zek that the cabbage palms and palmetto had turned to lilacs. The scent clung to him and the saddle, coming from everywhere, making the ride last only moments before they approached the corral. Even before they reached the pen, Zek sensed something was wrong. Apprehension drove away the smell and the thought of Glenda, and he put Ishmael into a fast gallop. He stopped just short of the rails and stared, disbelieving, into an empty corral. Frog rode up beside him and said,
"Now how the hell did they do that? I checked that gate myself and it was shut tight. They must have pushed it open and took off."
"I told you we shouldn't have gone off and left them alone," Zek said, guilt in his voice. "I told you we should have stayed here and watched after them."
"There's summers close by," Frog said assuringly. "Cows don't run at night lest they're afraid. If something had been after them, they'd have busted down the fence, not just opened the gate and walked out. There's not a single rail even pushed sideways. We'll find them in the morning."
"I hope so," Zek said doubtfully. "I've never lost a bunch of cows like this for no reason at all. We best start looking for them at first sunup. If we don't find them, I'll have a hard time explaining it to Papa."
Frog looked down from his horse and said,
"It's for sure nothing spooked them. The tracks are too close together for them to be running. They walked away from here calm as raccoons."
"We must not have locked the gate good," Zek said.
"Maybe so, but I could have sworn it was shut tight. I checked it right before we left."
"I put Nip and Tuck on the trail. They can sniff them out a lot quicker than we can follow the tracks."
Zek dismounted and whistled for the dogs. When they came to him, he pushed their noses to the ground and said,
"Go and find them. Go!"
They didn't bolt forward instantly and race away. Instead, they moved slowly and carefully at first, sniffing constantly, going off to the right and left to determine if any cow had wandered off alone. The trail led south for 4 miles, then it turned west into an area of dense palmetto. Frog signaled for Zek and Bonzo to stop, and then he said, "You think this is really worth it, Zek? If them cows scatters out in this palmetto thicket, we'll have to pop them out one at a time. We can round up a new bunch quicker than this." Zek knew what Frog said was true, but he was thinking of Tobias and the trust he placed in him to handle the roundup. He said, "Let's go just a bit further. The tracks are still all together. If we don't find them soon, we'll turn back and head for the hammock." They followed the tracks for a half mile more, going deeper into thick scrub. Then they came to a trail that ran straight into a narrow, dry slough, bordered on both sides by Spanish bayonet and thick clumps of palmetto. Zek was just about to call the dogs and turn back when it came, a shattering boom, ear-splitting, coming from somewhere on the right just ahead of them. Tuck's head flew off and rolled forward, blood gushing from the stump and spilling out in a flood. Rifle bullets peppered the ground around Nip. He braked quickly, tumbling over and over. Then he scrambled to his feet and retreated, running for the nearest cover. Then he fell again. Ishmael jumped sideways instinctively, somehow knowing what he must do, even before Zek realized what was happening. He staggered and then righted himself, almost throwing Zek from the saddle. Then he bolted into a clump of palmetto. Zek left the saddle and fell to the ground, stunned momentarily, before he heard someone close by shouting, "Bushwhackers! Bushwhackers! Stay hid! Stay hid!" The popping sounds continued as Zek lay still. A limb above him shattered, sending a fine spray of palmetto fiber into his eyes. He brushed it away and pushed himself to a sitting position. Then for the first time he realized what he had seen. Tuck's head departing its body, the instantly lifeless form tumbling over and over through its own blood. Then Nip falling also, scrambling and falling again, not knowing if he had escaped death or not. Fear gripped Zek, and then it turned to instant rage, uncontrollable rage. He snapped a frond from the palmetto and beat the ground with it, shouting, "Bastards! Bastards! Sons of bitches!" The firing stopped as suddenly as it began. The voice of Frog came again. "Stay put! Don't come out yet!" Zek ignored the warning. He jumped to his feet and staggered forward blindly, trying to see through tears that fogged his eyes. He walked into the open slough and to the body. He fell to his knees and touched the shaggy fur. Tuck's eyes were open, staring, seemingly puzzled as to what happened to him so swiftly. Zek reached out, grabbed the head, and placed it back to the body. Shouting came again. "Zek, get the hell out in there! They might not be gone yet!" He went to the sound and located Frog's horse. Then he ripped the pistol from the saddlebag and started running, screaming again, "Bastards! Bastards!" Frog tackled him from behind and struggled to hold him, the two of them tumbling over and over like wildcats fighting. The pistol went off, spewing smoke into their eyes. Then Frog shouted, "Don't be a fool, Zek! Anybody who'd do this for some scrawny yellowhammers would as soon shoot you as a buzzer. Let go the gun!" Zek loosened his grip and lay still. He looked up, rubbing his eyes. Seeing that it was Frog on top of him, he said, "What about Nip? Did they kill him, too?" "I don't know. Last time I seen him, he was making for the bushes over to the left of us. Let's go and see." The two of them got up, crossed the slough, and entered the palmetto. They found Nip 20 feet inside the brush. He was lying on his side, whimpering, trying to lift his head, but unable to do so. When he saw Zek, he wagged his tail feebly. Zek dropped down and touched him. "He's shot, but I can make him well. We'll take him back to the hammock." "No, Zek. His guts is blowed apart. He's hurting real bad. You'll have to finish him." Zek looked at the bloodied stomach, the gaping hole, realizing what must be done. "I can't do it, Frog. You'll have to." Then he walked away quickly. He cringed when the pistol fired, tears forming again in his eyes. Bonzo was standing by his horse, his left arm hanging limp and bloodstained. When Zek saw this, he went to him and said, "Are you hit bad, Bonzo?" "No,
Ain't nothing but a flesh wound. The bullet went clear through. I'll be okay soon as I tie a cloth to it. The bastard who cracked down on me ain't too good a shot.
Frog came from the palmetto and joined them. Let's get the hell out of here before them crazy fools decide to come back, he said. Not before I bury Nip and Tuck, Zek said. I ain't going to leave them here for buzzard bait.
Oh, come on, Zek. How the hell are you going to bury them dogs without a shovel? With my hands, if I have to. I'll not leave till it's done.
I'll help them, Frog said, knowing he could not get Zek away otherwise. I'll get some sticks to dig with. They scraped a hole in the ground, using both hands and hickory, and put the dogs in a common grave. Zek covered them by himself, patting the dirt firmly, hoping some panther or wolf would not come along, find them, and dig them up. He said,
I ain't never been able to read the book. If I could, I'd say words, but I don't know how. I hope the Lord blesses them.
As they mounted the horses to leave, Zek said, I ain't never going nowhere again without a gun. And if I ever find the bastards who done this, I'll blow their heads slam off, just like they done to Tuck.
We don't even know who it was, Frog said. And chances are we'll never know. There's varmints like them everywhere.
I'll know. If I ever come on them, I'll know. Just like Ishmael knowed the wolves were coming. Someday I'll find them.
Zek looked back briefly at the grave. Then he put Ishmael into a fast trot.
Don't try to blame all this on yourself, Zek, Tobias said. It ain't your fault. And it don't matter none at all about the cows. We got plenty more. I'm just glad all of you got out of it alive.
But I know it's my fault, Papa, Zek insisted. I killed Nip and Tuck just as sure as if I pulled the trigger myself. If I hadn't gone to the store and stayed for the frolic, none of this would have happened. They'd be alive.
Them men was back shooters, Zek, Tobias said harshly. Don't you understand that? Staying for the frolic might have saved your life.
Maybe so, but I won't leave a herd unguarded again. And when we get to Punta Rasa, you've got to get me a gun.
I'll do that. You ought to carry one anyway, but don't go around shooting every man you think might have killed the dogs.
Frog said, Mr. McIvey, what kind of gun could blow a dog's head slam off like it done Tuck's? I ain't never seen nothing like that before.
In all my lifetime, I've never seen but one that could do it.
It was stole from me when we lived in the scrub. It's a 10-gauge breech loader with 2 40-inch barrels. It was made by a gunsmith just for my daddy, and it's the only thing he left me besides grief. There may be others like it, but I ain't seen one. It has my mark on the stock. Some of them varmints who bushwhacked you could be the same ones who burned my house.
I'm glad they turned a rifle on Bonzo instead of that thing, Frog said. If they had, he'd be scattered all over the prairie.
I killed a bear with it once, Zek said, and it liked to have broke my shoulder. If I ever see that old gun again, I'll know it even without the mark.
Frog said,
I've been trying to figure out what's missing around here. Where's Skillet?
I sent him after some orange trees 5 days ago, and he ain't come back yet. I've done dug all the holes while he's been gone. Maybe he ended up in Georgia instead of Fort Pierce. I don't think nobody would bushwhack a wagon full of orange trees.
Bonzo sat at the stoop while Emma put a fresh dressing on the wound. When she finished, she said,
You'll be as good as new in a couple of days. Go on now and join that man talk while I fix supper.
Thanks, Miss Emma, Bonzo said. I appreciate you doing this for me.
You're welcome. And I'll see to your stomach next. It's probably in worse shape than your arm.
Tobias said, Frog, you and Bonzo take the horses down to the barn. They probably need some rest after you run them like you did.
I'll go and help, Zek said.
No. You stay here. I want to talk to you.
Zek and Tobias sat on the edge of the stoop while the horses were led away. Tobias said,
Son, I know you're hurting now, hurting real bad. I've felt the pain myself, and I know how it is. But don't grieve too long for Nip and Tuck. Let it go soon. What you just seen and been through will come again and again. This whole wilderness is built on such as that, and it's going to get worse before it gets better, if it ever does. You've got to learn to take the bad as well as the good, no matter what comes along. Don't go on hurting too long.
Papa,
I don't think I'll ever forget seeing what I seen. Not ever.
Yes, you will. There ain't no pain that don't fade away. We'll get other dogs, and you'll like them, too. And a time will come when they take the place of Nip and Tuck. The new dogs will be the ones close to you, and the ones you remember, not the old ones. That's the way it is. Something you like and lose will be replaced. And it'll go on, over and over again.
Would you forget Mama if she left us?
Tobias did not expect such a response. He said, "That's different. I'm not talking about people, I'm talking about critters. But there's men who can replace a woman, and a year later hardly remember her name or anything about her. Only the one with them at the time matters. But no, Zack, I would not forget your Mama, or replace her either."
"That's what I thought you'd say. And I feel the same about Nip and Tuck. I don't think I'll ever want any more dogs."
Tobias put his arm on Zek's shoulder. "We don't talk much like this, and maybe we ought to do it more often. I guess we've both been too busy chasing cows. What I said, I've said badly. I ain't good with words, and you know that. All I'm trying to tell you is to be strong. Don't ever let nothing get you down. Don't be afraid or ashamed to love or to grieve when the thing you love is gone. Just don't let it throw you, no matter how much it hurts. If you make it in this wilderness, you got to be strong. Do you understand me?"
"Yes, Papa, I understand. And I'm sorry I cried for the dogs."
"Don't be. Don't ever be sorry for something like that. There ain't nothing wrong with a man crying. I'd done it for a week when my Mama died. But when you get done with it, start over again. And don't ever look back. Now, go on down to the barn and see to Ishmael. He probably won't let Frog or Bonzo touch him."
"I'll see to him, Papa. I'll feed him and water him and brush him down, too. I ran him pretty hard coming back to the hammock."
Tobias watched him run away, seeing him as a boy again, but knowing that such a time was gone forever. He said, "You'll see to it proper, Zack. You always have." After supper, Tobias went to the barn to pen the oxen for the night, leaving Emma and Zack alone in the house. Zack was at the table, still brooding about the dogs in spite of what his father said. Emma sat beside him, wanting to distract him from such thoughts. She said,
"Did you have a good time at the frolic?"
"I guess. But I didn't dance. I don't know how."
"Did you meet someone?"
"Yes, ma'am."
"Was she pretty?"
"The prettiest thing I ever seen,"
Zack responded, knowing he could talk to his mother more frankly about something like this than he could his father.
"She had hair as red as a sunset, and she smelled like flowers."
"I smelled like flowers once, but not anymore."
"You smell just fine, Mama," he said, touching her hand, "and you always have. Not like flowers anymore. That's for young girls. Did you like her?"
"She rode with me on Ishmael. Her name is Glenda, Glenda Turner. Her daddy owns a store at Fort Drum."
"But did you like her?" she asked again.
"I never been that close to a girl before. I guess I did. She made me dizzy, like I was spinning around and around. She said if I come back, she'll teach me to dance."
Emma put her hand on his.
"Zack, if you like her, don't stay away too long. Flowers has a way of being plucked by someone, and there's not many nice ones out here in the wilderness. They don't stay in bloom forever."
"Maybe I can go back there after the drive. If I can find the time, I'll go."
"You best make the time. Cows won't ever smell good like flowers. Someday you'll know that."
Zack remembered Frog saying to him, "Cows ain't everything."
He said, "Thanks, Mama. I won't forget what you've told me. I'll go back to Fort Drum first chance I get." Everyone was in the house at noon the next day, just finishing dinner, when the wagon creaked into the clearing. It looked like a mobile grove, with orange trees crammed into every inch of available space. Skillet stopped just beside the stoop and shouted, "I's back, everybody! I's back! Come and see what I got!" Tobias expected only trees, and he was surprised, like everyone else, at the sight of a girl on the wagon seat, perched there like a frightened owl, her eyes wide and blinking. Skillet said, "This here's Pearly May. Preacher done married us, proper and legal." His face was split by a grin, with only teeth showing. "So that's what your chore has been," Tobias exclaimed, still staring. "If you wanted a wife, Skillet, why the hell didn't you just say so?"
"I was over 40 years old now, Mr. Tobias, and if I don't start me a family now, I'll soon be too old to even try. Pearly may be a big help to Mrs. Emma. She knows how to cook and wash and sew and do most everything. You don't mind I brought her here, do you? She won't be a bother to nobody."
"Of course I don't mind," Tobias responded. "You're most welcome, Pearly May."
Frog started jumping up and down, shouting, "Yee-haw! Yee-haw! Old Skillet's done got him a woman. There's going to be nigger babies all over the hammock, thick as June bugs."
"Shut up your mouth, Frog," Skillet said, "before I pick you up and sling you into a buzzard's nest where you belong. You're scaring the hell out in Pearly May. She'll think you crazy."
"He is," Tobias said. "Don't pay no mind to him, Pearly May. He's just jealous. Wouldn't nothing mate up with Frog, not even a wolf."
"One thing for sure," Frog said, "ain't no woman going to get the chance. I'd as soon be in a buzzard's nest as be tied to some woman's apron strings."
"You men hush up now," Emma admonished. "You're chattering on like a bunch of jaybirds drunk on china berries." Then she turned to the girl. "You got a fine man, Pearly May, real fine. Come on down off there and let's take a look at you."
The girl climbed down reluctantly, looking as if she might yet bolt and run. She was about 20, 2 feet shorter than Skillet, and 15 pounds overweight for her size. Her head was wrapped in a red bandana, and a feed sack dress came down to the top of an oversized pair of brogan shoes. She managed a feeble smile, and then she said,
"I's glad to meet you, Mrs. Emma. Skillet done told me all about you and Mr. McIvy and Zek and everybody else, too. I's glad to be here."
Emma put her arm around the still-frightened girl and said, "We're glad to have you in the family, Pearly May. Real glad. Let's me and you go in the kitchen and have some woman talk and leave the men to themselves. I'll fix us a fresh pot of coffee." Pearly May seemed to relax as she followed Emma into the house. Skillet said,
"Where's the dogs? I wanted to show them to Pearly May right off so they'd be friendly with her. I don't want her coming on them sudden-like and think they wolves."
Tobias glanced at Zek, and then he said, "We'll talk about that later, Skillet. The dogs ain't here just now." Frog said teasingly,
"How much a ugly nigger like you have to pay for a woman, Skillet? I bet you paid as much for her as I could buy a wagon load of Cuban rum."
"I done told you once before to shut your mouth, Frog. If you don't, I'm going to skin you out like a rabbit."
He smiled as he said it.
"When you two get done with your fun, and we need to set out them trees," Tobias said. "Ain't good for them to be out of the ground too long, and I got all the holes dug."
Zek spoke up and said, "While you're doing that, could me and Ishmael go down in the woods, Papa?"
"Sure, go on. We don't need you with the planting."
As Zek walked toward the barn, Skillet said,
"Zek don't look too good, Mr. Tobias. He been sick?"
"I'll tell you about it while we plant the trees."
Chapter 19.
"The cows need salt, Mr. Tobias," Skillet said. "They looks poorly. Let's take them to that river marsh up north of here where there's salt grass."
"I've been thinking about that myself," Tobias replied. "After we graze there for a while, we can turn south and cross the river. Go and tell the others to turn north."
The prairie was deep brown, burned by drought, and it would take 30 acres to feed just one cow. There were more than 2,000 in the herd, all of them lanky after a winter in the swamps and woods. They moved faster than on past grazing drives, clipping the ground bare and ambling on, leaving behind a dust haze that made riding in the trailing wagon a constant annoyance. Both Emma and Pearlie May wore bandanas over their faces to gain what protection they could from the dust. Sun rays bore down unmercifully from a cloudless sky, creating shimmering heat waves that looked like rolling ocean surf made of smoke. It played tricks on all of them, making distance judgment difficult, sometimes blocking out the horizon. Cypress stands ahead of them moved vertically and then horizontally, disappearing momentarily and then coming back like mystic ships with masts void of sails. The entire prairie seemed to be one giant vacuum just waiting to explode. Men and horses were sapped of strength by mid-afternoon, and Tobias's shirt was soaked with sweat when he rode to the wagon. He said to Emma, "There's a pond fed by a spring at the stand over to the right. Pull on over there and we'll stop for the day. I think everybody needs rest and water." The cows smelled the pond and turned to it without being herded. And when the wagon reached the stand, the pond was already stomped brown with mud. Emma and Pearlie May filled buckets at the spring before the cattle desecrated it too. Skillet tied his horse to a bush and said, "Lord have mercy. I ain't never noted to be so hot this time of year. That old sun putting out heat like a wood stove full of hickory. The way I've been sweating today, I knows I must stink worse than any polecat ever been born."
"I can smell you from here," Pearlie May said, grinning. "You show sleep by yourself tonight, else you go in the pond with the cows and wash up some."
"I think I'll just do that. Move over, cows. That's coming in."
"Fly seem to like this dry heat," Emma said. "They're as thick here as molasses. I don't know how we'll keep them out of the cooking pot."
Tobias dismounted, took a dipper of water from one bucket and poured it over his head. "If I didn't know better, I'd swear the tops of them cabbage palms are smoking," he said. "They look like they're going to catch fire any minute, and if they do, with the prairie so dry, we're all going to be fried blacker than coon meat."
"You think we ought to turn back and put the cows in a swamp?" Skillet asked. "We do that, they could at least keep out in the sun."
"No, we'll move on. A couple days more, we'll make that marsh flat. The grass is bound to be better there. I've never seen that flat go as dry as this place."
Zek rode in and turned Ishmael loose at the spring. He dropped to the ground and put his head under water. Then he filled his hat and came back to the wagon. He sat by Emma and put the hat back on, flooding his shirt and the top of his pants.
"Feels good," he said.
Tobias said to Zek, "As soon as you get done cooling off a bit, take a limb and keep the cows away from the spring. There's water enough for them in the pond, and we don't want the spring messed up, too."
The sinking sun brought no relief from the heat. Emma fixed a supper of beef stew, baked potatoes and biscuits, and even Frog and Bonzo ate lightly. No one seemed interested in food. Frog pushed his plate aside and said,
"Is my eyes playing tricks on me, or is something peculiar going on out yonder?"
"I don't see nothing but cows and palmetto," Skillet said.
Frog squinted.
"Maybe it's just sweat and dust in my eyes, but I swear I just seen some of them bushes pick up and move. There's something out there besides cows."
"I seen it too," Zek said. "Over to the left, about a quarter mile."
They all continued gazing. And then Zek said,
"There, you see it, Dan? It's deer."
A herd of a dozen deer stood alert, staring at the cypress stand, then darting behind palmetto clumps and coming out again.
"They act like they want to come to the wagon," Frog said. "You reckon they smell Miss Emma's biscuits?"
"'Tain't that," Tobias said. "It's the spring. I bet you we done blocked off the only watering hole around here that ain't gone dry. If we have, every varmint on the prairie will be trying to come in here tonight for a drink."
"If they do, we'll have more wolves and bears and panthers than cows," Skillet said. "Maybe we ought to move on away from here before it gets dark."
"We could build a whole line of fires around the stand," Frog said. "They sure won't come through that to get in here."
"That wouldn't help the cows," Tobias said. "We can't cram 2,000 cows inside a 1-acre cypress stand. They'd still be out there in the open, fair game for whatever comes off the prairie."
"If Nip and Tuck were here, they could handle it," Zek said.
"They're sorely missed, for sure,"
Tobias said. "I never knew just how much of the work them dogs did till they were gone. But they're not here now, and that's a fact. We can sit here jawing all night, and it won't help matters one bit. We best decide what to do and then do it."
Emma said,
You can't blame the animals. They get thirsty, too. And it's their water, same as ours. We can fill the barrel and the buckets and leave. What difference does it make if we camp here or a few miles further on?
None at all, Tobias said. Sometimes you're the only one makes sense, Emma. Let's all saddle up and move on. Let them critters out there have their turn. Ain't no use in us starting a war tonight over nothing.
I'd sure like to be here when all them critters come together at the pond, Zek said. That'll be a sight to see. I bet the fur'll fly thicker than dandelions.
That's their problem, Tobias said. Ours is the cows. We'll go a few miles on and stop again.
Just before midnight, when he was relieved from watch by Bonzo, Zek did not return to the camp. Instead, he rode south across the prairie, back toward the cypress stand they abandoned that afternoon. There was a full moon glowing, and far in the west, fingers of dry lightning cut the sky and were followed by dull rumblings. Tobias would be watching this, too, during his guard duty, watching with concern, hoping the slender fingers from above would not spark a fire in the tender dry grass. This was the most feared danger they faced on open prairie, fire that could move as swiftly as deer and destroy all in its path. A full moon was always magical to Zek, bringing a time of enchantment when all the harshness of sunburned prairie vanished and was replaced by soft outlines of palm and palmetto. He knew this to be a time of danger, when predators roamed and ruled the countryside. But this reality did not break his thoughts as Ishmael carried him slowly across the quiet plain. There were many times back in the hammock when he slipped from the house unnoticed and walked alone through the woods and along the river during full moon, seeing and experiencing a totally different world from that of day. There was a warmness about it on winter nights and a coolness in summer, and always it made him feel as if he were part and parcel of nature and its night creatures, a closeness that dissipated with the coming of the sun. When he came to within a quarter mile of the stand, he tied Ishmael to a bush and walked on alone, moving slowly and without sound. Then he stopped 100 yards short of the pond and dropped to the ground beside a palmetto. The first forms that visited the stand were deer, and they were soon replaced by the smaller, vague bodies of foxes and rabbits and raccoons. He lay there in the dry grass and watched a procession come in groups of their own kind, wolves, bears, a mother panther with a litter of cubs, all passing each other without comment, drinking and disappearing again into the night. There were no growls of anger, no warnings to move away, no snarling flashes of superiority, deadly natural enemies seemingly under a truce understood only by themselves, sharing equally a thing they all must have to survive. Zek watched spellbound, wondering what would happen if Nip and Tuck were with him, if they too would understand and honor this truce, retreat from natural instincts and patiently await their turn, or if they would charge forward and engage in combat to run the others away without sharing. He was glad they were not present at this moment, for he did not want the scene challenged. He knew it was possible he would never again witness it. Time passed swiftly as the strange parade continued, and he finally realized he should return to the camp lest his mother awaken and find him missing. He got up reluctantly and made his way back to Ishmael. No one stirred as he tied the horse and unsaddled him. Off to the right, the herd stood motionless, not even the swish of a tail breaking the silence. He wondered if they somehow knew no danger would come their way this night, if they were aware of the ritual taking place a few miles to the south. He lay on his blanket and used the saddle as a pillow, staring upward at the star-peppered sky, awed by what the night brought him. He was still awake when Tobias rode in from the herd at dawn. Two days later, they reached a low plain that stretched for 5 miles north and south and 3 miles eastward from the river.
There were no trees here, only unbroken marsh, and the grass was taller than prairie grass and more wiry. In times past, when they brought herds to the salt marsh, the ground was soggy, and the imprint of cow's hoof seeped brackish water. Now there were vast stretches of cracked mud that felt powdery to the step. They made camp beneath a grove of cabbage palms on higher land, overlooking the basin. Then they drove the cows into the marsh. In spite of the dryness, the grass was bountiful, and Tobias knew the herd would get salt and minerals here that were unavailable on the prairie. He figured there was sufficient grazing for at least 2 weeks. The days and nights settled into a dull routine of eating and sleeping and riding guard, but there was the diversion of going to the river and catching fish that Emma either fried or made into chowder. The river was 3 feet below its normal level, and would be no problem to cross with the wagon when the time came to turn west. At noon on the fourth day at the marsh, black clouds formed a solid wall in the west, and the wind quickened. Tobias watched hopefully as thunderheads inched upward and closer, and by mid-afternoon the marsh was turned a somber yellow by a sunless sky. Lightning flashes were followed by sharp crashing thunder, scattering the egrets and herons from their feeding grounds close by the river. All of the men not on watch cut poles and hurriedly fashioned lean-tos from palmetto fronds. The wind increased until finally the marsh grass lay flat against the ground. Then solid sheets of rain blew in vertically, slashing men, horses, and cattle. From the camp the plain became invisible. When they could no longer see the herd, Tobias and Zek abandoned the watch and made their way back to the wagon. Night came 2 hours earlier than usual, and the cooking fire hissed and went out before Emma could prepare food. They huddled beneath the lean-tos and ate beef jerky, and soon the pounding rain found its way through the palmetto roofs and drenched them. The rain stopped just before dawn, and daybreak came once again to a cloudless sky. Tobias stirred and said, "We needed rain real bad, but that one was almost too much. I hope nobody floated away." He got out of the wagon and walked across the soggy ground, stopping at the rim of the basin. The herd was all there, standing in a sheet of water covering the marsh. It looked as if grass were growing from a lake. Because the basin was lowland and mucky rather than sandy, the water did not run off quickly or become absorbed. Instead, it dropped to a 1-inch cover and remained that way, releasing millions upon millions of mosquito eggs attached to the grass, dormant eggs that would incubate quickly in the intense heat and turn into larvae. Each invisible larva would eat and breathe for 4 days, and after shedding its skin 4 times, become a pupa. At this stage, it discontinued eating and changed rapidly, and in another 2 days, its skin split, allowing an adult mosquito to pull itself out and dry its wings in preparation for flight. No one in the camp was aware of this natural chain of events taking place across the tranquil marsh. Zek was at the river alone, fishing. When he felt the stinging on his neck and arms, he slapped vigorously. Then he waved his hand back and forth across his face. "Damn skeeters," he mumbled as he threw down the cane pole and then mounted Ishmael. Tobias and Skillet were with the herd, puzzled by the faint humming sound drifting across the marsh from the north. Then they saw it, a solid black cloud extending from the ground 30 feet upward, moving toward them. As they watched, other clouds formed in the west and in the south. Skillet said, "What is it, Mr. Tobias? Is it locusts? I've heard of a locust swarm, but I've never seen one." "Whatever it is, I got a feeling it ain't good. We might need some help with the cows." Tobias glanced toward the river and saw Zek enter a cloud and disappear momentarily, then emerge in a full gallop. He said, "I don't know what's happening, Skillet, but I think we best get the hell out of here." Before they could turn the horses, the stinging came, setting their bodies on fire. Tobias looked down, and his legs were covered solidly by mosquitoes. His horse bolted straight upward and crashed down on its side, struggling and kicking, trying to regain its footing. Tobias felt the breath go out of his lungs, and for a moment he couldn't move. He brushed feebly at his body as he heard Skillet's horse whinny loudly and start bucking. He also heard frantic bellowing come from the herd. Cows were bucking, kicking, and falling all around him as Zek raced across the marsh. As soon as a cow hit the ground, mosquitoes swarmed